All right.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Foot Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
How are you, Allison?
I'm good. I had a great sleep.
Yeah.
It was deep.
Nice. And was it this movie? Did it have those
a
effects?
Calming effect. It's a great movie. No. We had a long day yesterday. You know, we did a lot of stuff.
We did.
And we had a great day. We got to cap it off by seeing this. I really enjoyed this
movie. I liked it. It was weird.
It is weird, but I think, you know, when you see Ari Aster's name on a film, you should just go ahead and expect weird being the bare minimum.
Absolutely. It's going to be, at the very least, extremely strange.
It's always going to be different than anything you've seen.
Yes.
Hereditary got to be the most normal movie he's ever made.
Yeah, and that's saying something.
Not that normal.
No. There's a decapitated head of a child in that movie.
That happens 20 minutes after. So, yeah, I mean, this is awesome. Ari Aster continuing with the themes of family relations being fucked.
Yeah, wow. And also, I'll just tell you guys this. I just watched his, like, student film, which is his short film called There's Something, The Strange Thing About the Johnsons. And, wow. It also has some things about family relationships.
Yeah, Ari Aster, somebody check on him.
Is he good?
How is his relationship with, like, his dad and mom? Because if I had to just guess by his work, I would say it's really, really bad. Like, maybe the worst anyone's ever had.
Yeah.
I can't be for sure, but he did. Like, I wouldn't. If I was his parents, I would be like, what are you trying to say, bud?
What are you saying about me?
What is your issue? After every single movie, he'd be like, nothing.
Nothing.
I love you guys. We have a great relationship. This is all fantasy. And then you go see the next new one, and you're like, hey, Ari, what the fuck? We're getting questions.
Yeah, he really does like to focus on that familial trauma theme.
Yeah, seems
and
like he's got some connections.
It does, and this movie, I think, even more so than Midsommar, is absolutely conceived on acid.
Oh, yes. Every single one of his movies, as well as getting more, like, weird,
yeah,
gets
trippier.
Trippier. Like, far more, like, drug-like. Like, in Midsommar, most of it's normal, except for a few scenes where they are
literally on,
drugs.
Yeah.
This one is just, like, an acid trip. Like,
yeah.
And I've seen it described a lot of places, mm-hmm. And I would 100% agree.
Absolutely. Even with the, like, the technicalities of the film, like, even the way they've, like, filming and certain mm-hmm. things, and, like, that little break we get in the middle of the film where, like,
It's animated.
Oh, yeah. That especially is just so
well,
trippy.
Well, and the people, I think, often describe, like, being high on hallucinogens is sort of like you go underwater and you come up from water, and there's a lot of
right.
that in the film.
Yes.
Yeah, so this film is honestly jam-packed full of absolute stars.
Absolutely. The acting, phenomenal.
Yes.
So good.
We've got, of course, Joaquin Phoenix.
Absolutely amazing. He's doing great as always. We have Nathan Lane.
Doing so good. He's just so fun.
My man.
I love him. He's just being so fun.
He's so good.
We have
Patti LuPone.
Patti LuPone is an absolute scene stealer.
Even with Joaquin Phoenix, she steals those scenes right out from under him.
Literally schooling Joaquin Phoenix in acting in every single scene. It's like, this woman is a great. There'll never be a woman like this.
Yes.
I'm glad she's finding her way into horror.
Me too.
A lot. I feel like she really thrives in that
Absolutely.
Genre.
She did incredible. She was so scary.
Yeah. And she's really good in, I mean, she's been on American Horror Story
right.
for a couple seasons now. And I think that's a great call on their part. I think that it's a great call on Ari Aster's part to cast her. Also, oh my gosh, who's the lady that plays Patti LuPone Young?
Oh,
she's
let me.
She's in a ton of stuff. I never remember her name, but she is like
Zoe Lister-Jones.
Yes, and she's in, like,
New Girl.
Yeah, like, she's in New Girl, is what I know her from.
Yeah. She's in several, like, CBS comedies and stuff, but
yes.
That is who plays young Mona.
You've seen this girl, like, I mean, she's one of those people that you couldn't, like, say anything and be like, oh, yeah, she's, like, the main character. But
right.
She's a memorable character in, like, everything she's in.
Oh, yeah.
She's just really interesting they picked her.
Yes, Parker Posey's in it.
Parker Posey's in it. Who's our newcomer, the guy that plays young Bo?
Armin, Nahapichian.
Well, Armin.
Armin.
He was really great. He honestly didn't have as much screen time as I feel like I was expecting
as the trailers kind of indicated.
But that wasn't necessarily like a bad thing.
I didn't really care.
Yeah, me neither. I'm glad Joaquin had as much as he did.
Right, he's so good. The scenes where it's just like Joaquin's face and he's on the phone are like my favorites. Because he's just such a good actor. It's really impressive. And also, for people who know The Office, Amy Ryan, who plays Holly in The Office, is in this movie, plays Nathan Lane's wife. Mm. That's where people will know her from.
Man, everyone's getting old.
Yeah. So, Beau's Afraid is a 2023 American surrealist black tragicomedy.
That is exactly how I would describe it. And I think that something that's interesting that I've seen a lot in a lot of reviews is a lot of people are going into this not knowing that it is comedic.
It's a comedy. He always said it was going to be a comedy.
It is a black comedy. Like, right. Literally, that's what it is. It's like a horror comedy. And, like, I've just seen a lot of people going in, I think, expecting a straight horror. Mm-hmm. And it is not that. And I do think that your experience of this is going to be ruined if you don't laugh at this movie.
If you do not allow yourself to enjoy the comedic aspects of this movie.
Because there's just some ridiculous shit in this film.
Our theater laughed so much.
Oh, yeah. Our theater was giggling.
Yeah.
I'm going to crack open my soap.
Yeah.
If I can get my finger under. I have nails, so it's like I can't open things anymore. No.
Let me know if you need me to do it.
Yeah. No, I
can't. Ooh, nice.
There we go.
Yeah, so it has a budget of $35 million. It's obviously opening weekend, so it's only made $1.6 million. But I doubt it'll make that $35 million back. Personally.
You don't think they're going to make $35 million back?
I don't think so.
What did the other movies make? What did Midsommar make?
Let's see. I don't think it was as expensive either.
Probably not, but
let's see.
He didn't have, you know, at that point, Florence Pugh was
well,
famous.
Wow. Hereditary had a budget of $10 million and it made $82.5 million.
That's what I'm saying.
You think that it'll do that?
I think that,
I just worry about it being a 3-hour movie. Is all.
I think it's fine.
But it did not feel like a 3-hour movie.
No, it felt fat. It felt like
2 hours, two and a half hours. It did not feel like a 3-hour movie at all.
No, maybe 2 hours is what I would say it felt like. Honestly, it flew
by. I was not expecting it to go by as fast as
like
it did.
Like when it ended, I was like,
is that the
over?
End? Is that the
and
end?
And then like we looked at the time and we were like, yeah, like I guess that means for 3 hours. I do think in Midsommar, obviously Flo Pugh kind of a breakout star that. And that did probably help inflate those numbers. But she wasn't really famous going in, so it had basically mm-hmm. no star power behind
right,
it.
Right, and this does.
This has a ton of star power behind it. And once again, I think that, like, I think a lot of people that have seen it on the early releases mm-hmm. are, like, critics and people in L.A.
Right.
And stuff. And I think a lot of people have complained about it either being, like, again, they don't get that it's supposed to be funny.
Right.
Or they complain about the, like, I guess just, like, the premise of the movie, which is, like, that Beau is afraid.
Yeah, it's the title of the movie.
And that it's, like, too much.
Mm.
But also, like, I don't know. I kind of think that's what makes it fun.
Yeah.
I kind of think that regular audiences are going to have a different opinion. But I don't know. Horror comedy is a hard sell.
It is. And, I mean, I think that horror comedy is one of the best genres out there. And mm-hmm. I think that if you do it well, it can be one of the best movies ever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods, one of the best movies ever made.
Highly underappreciated
if you can,
time.
If you can tap into that, like, horror comedy, then I think you can really make a great movie. And I think he did. I thought this was hilarious.
I thought so, too. And I thought it was nice and scary, like, perfectly scary.
Yeah, and, like, there were scenes where I was like, ah!
Oh, yeah. Funny.
Yeah. There were no scenes, like, in Hereditary where you're, like, kind of almost peeing your pants.
There were no scenes that, like, maybe want to pee or throw up.
Yeah.
Like, in Midsommar, there were some scenes where I was legit like, this is fucking gruesome. I'm going to puke.
Right.
In Hereditary, I was so scared that I thought I was going to pee my pants.
Right.
And in this, I was just having a fun ride.
It was so fun.
It just kind of felt like I was sort of, like, on drugs.
Yeah.
And it was almost like, all the bad stuff, all the gruesome, horrible stuff that happened, it almost was just, like, so over the top.
Yeah.
You can't help but kind of just be like, of course.
Exactly. Like, the scene where, they probably won't mention this, when he, like, stabs his hand. Like, there's, like, it's, like, it's so silly.
But it was really gruesome. Yeah. But, like, yeah, it was so silly that you couldn't, like, be overtaken by how gruesome it was.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of scenes like that where stuff that happens is so gruesome.
Like Parker Posey's death.
And horrific and scary looking. But because of the way it happens and everyone's reactions to it.
It's so funny.
You just can't be grossed out or horrified.
And the death of the little of the young girl. Like, that also is like...
You can be horrified for like 0.5 seconds until someone says something and then you're not horrified anymore. It's like you're laughing.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Take me on the journey.
Yeah.
What
happened? Beau Wasserman is the son of a famous and wealthy businesswoman, Mona. He grows up without a father, who his mother says died during an orgasm, which was also when Beau was conceived. That's a wild scene.
So, if that was confusing to you, what happens is, the minute his dad finishes inside of his mom, he dies. Like a black widow praying mantis. I don't know. I don't know another species that... I'm sure there are some species that when they come, they die.
Yeah. And she says this is a heart murmur, a hereditary medical condition that she claims was passed down to Beau.
Yeah. So she basically says this is also like, if you have sex
you're going to die.
And so that's like... They kind of skipped... Have they skipped the scene too with the birth?
Yes.
Okay, I feel like that's important.
I think so,
it's
too.
It's small, but I think it's important to set the tone.
The movie begins with Beau being born.
With Beau literally being born. So you start, you hear, like, a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
It's war. It's, like, kind of, like...
He's inside.
You can kind of tell that everything's, like, calm and muted. And then it's just, like, bright flashes of color.
Screaming. His mom yelling.
His mom's yelling. It's very disorienting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, Beau's, like, first memory is... His first moments of the world are his mom already freaking out over something.
Mm-hmm.
She's freaked out that he's not crying.
Yeah.
And, of course, that is a problem for babies. But the doctors basically just say, like... He's fine, and she just won't stop freaking out.
Yeah.
And they do eventually get him to cry, and then that's when we...
The movie starts.
The movie starts.
Right. As a teenager, Beau meets and falls in love with a girl named Elaine. The two kiss and promise to remain virgins until they meet again as adults. So that does not happen first.
This is, I don't think, in order. It's, like, in chronological order.
Right.
Like, they're... All of this is interspersed as flashbacks throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Because after birth, we actually see present day Beau.
Yeah. So this is present day Beau right now. This is where we begin right after the birth. As an adult, Beau is extremely anxious and living alone in a crime ridden city.
Whatever crime ridden city you think that you live in, this is a million times.
This is like comedic, like...
Fox News's idea of a crime-ridden city. This is what they think is going on.
His therapist prescribes him an experimental drug for his anxiety and warns him to only take it with water. He prepares for a flight to see his mother for the anniversary of his father's alleged death, but sleeps...
Which is also his, like... conceived date.
Yeah. Ew. But sleeps through his alarm after a neighbor keeps him awake with their loud music. Well,
okay, so this is like kind of where we first have a little bit of like weirdness. Now,
what is happening?
Like at the beginning of this movie, the birth thing happens. It's pretty like normal. But it's just like, oh, anxiety.
Right.
Then we see Beau. He goes to his therapist. It's pretty normal therapy where it's just like, oh.
Anxiety about seeing his mom.
It's what's interesting. Then you have at the very end of this scene with the therapist, he says, like, always take the pill with water. And he's like, always take it with water. He's so serious about it. It's on the bottle in bright red. It says, like, always take this with water. So then you come to his neighborhood and you see... This place is just, like, corpses in the street.
Yes.
No cops.
People are fighting.
People are fighting 24/7. People are having sex in the streets. Mm-hmm. Like, just, like, absolute nothing.
Depraved.
To a point that you're like...
This is ridiculous.
You're like, what? But, like, it's not so ridiculous yet that you're willing to, like, laugh at it. Beau gets chased in by this guy covered in tattoos with, like, these black eyes.
Mm-hmm.
He makes it, though. And then... Yeah, he goes upstairs, and then he tries to go to bed, and this is where we first start getting the hint that, like, something is weird and not as it seems.
Something is not making sense.
This is not reality.
Yeah. So,
or there's, like, ghosts or something.
Right. So he keeps getting these, like, notes passed under his door that's, like, turn down your music, I'm trying to sleep, turn down your music, but he's not playing any music.
And they're getting, like, more and more aggressive.
And insistent.
But, like, Beau... like, doesn't get out there fast enough to ever confront
right.
the person and tell him, like, hey, it's not my music. But then right after Bo kind of, apparently you can kind of tell that he's like, fuck this, I'm not doing this anymore.
Right.
He starts to hear the music.
Yeah, it is loud, and it's like banging on the walls.
Banging on the walls, but it's still not him.
Right.
And it's not clear to me whether that is his neighbor playing mm-hmm. music to get back at him,
mm-hmm.
or if
he is hearing the music,
or if he is hearing the music for the first time,
right?
And it does exist, but either way, he like plugs his ears to go to sleep. When in the morning, the music like very suddenly shuts off. Mm-hmm. You know, 5 hours after his
yeah.
alarm goes off,
yeah. So he wakes up late. After hastily packing, he discovers that his keys and luggage has been stolen from his door. So he leaves his keys in his door and his luggage in his doorway and runs back to get some floss. And then comes back and both his bag and his keys have been taken.
Yeah, immediately. Then he asks some maintenance worker if he knows what happened yeah. or if anyone takes it. Because the maintenance worker is just, like, in the hall.
Right.
And this would have happened, you know, seconds ago.
Yeah.
And the maintenance worker just goes, you're fucked, buddy. You're fucked.
Yeah.
And, like, he's like, what? Why?
Yeah.
And then the maintenance worker just leaves.
Yeah, very weird. Bo calls his mother to explain the situation, but she dismisses him.
Yeah, she basically thinks
guilt
that he's
him.
Lying.
Yeah,
like she doesn't say that, but he can obviously tell that he thinks she's lying. And he keeps, like, basically asking her, like, well, what do you want me to do?
What do I do? What do I do?
What would be good for you? Like, what do you want me to do? And she's just like,
make a decision.
Make the right choice.
Yeah.
And
he's like, tell me what to do.
Obviously, he really struggles to make. We see that with the floss.
Right.
He, like, wants to bring it.
But he can't make the decision himself.
And so only at the last minute is he like, oh, okay, I guess I'll take it. And
that's why his stuff is stolen.
Yep. So
Bo takes his medication, but panics when he discovers there's a water outage. This is a very funny scene.
His apartment sucks ass.
On his way to a convenience store across the street, he evades a group of deranged homeless people who break into his apartment and lock him out.
Yeah, okay. So this is, again, another scene where you start to go, like,
is this reality?
Yeah, what the fuck? So he runs across the street. He's dodging.
Help me.
He's literally dodging bullets.
Yeah.
He's like, jumping over people that are having sex. He's like avoiding being stabbed mm-hmm. narrowly. He gets into the convenience store. It's completely calm in there.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong in the convenience store.
Yes.
He gets some water, drinks it, but then he doesn't have enough money to pay for it because his card's being declined.
Mm-hmm. So he's trying to get cash out of his wallet.
And he's like, doesn't really necessarily have enough, but as this is happening, he keeps looking over and
people keep going in. At first,
it's like a couple people.
Right.
Then it's like five or six. And then he looks back and it's like 20 people.
The
entire neighborhood is going into his apartment complex in a steady stream. And there's nothing he can do about it.
Right.
Which is just like, obviously, it's kind of like,
that would never happen.
That is not happening.
So they lock him out. After sleeping on the scaffolding outside of his apartment, Bo returns to his vandalized apartment the next morning. He attempts to call his mother, only to have it answered. Only to have it answered by a postal worker who tells him that she was in a decapitated. She was decapitated in an accident. The postal worker is played by Bill Hader.
Yeah.
And this scene is so funny and sad. When he calls his mom and the postal worker is like trying to figure out, he's like, I'm trying to, you know, figure this out because you're saying this might be your mom, but she's like decapitated. And he's like, can you describe her physique?
Yeah, which is funny because if he had,
then
we would have known things later.
Exactly.
But of course, Bo is useless as he always is
with making decisions
with anything. And eventually the postal worker hangs up and is like, I shouldn't have answered this.
Well, he says,
you need to talk to the cop.
He says, hey, you probably dialed the wrong number by accident.
Yeah, this conversation goes on for like five minutes.
How about you call back? And then he's like, okay. And he calls back and the postal worker answers, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. It's like,
so funny.
It's like, this whole conversation is hilarious. It goes on for so long. But of course, under all of it is like, Bo's mom is dead because a chandelier fell on her head and just like squished her like a little bug or something.
Joaquin Phoenix's acting though in this is just, he's just like, what?
Joaquin Phoenix, so I have a lot of thoughts on this, but it's like Joaquin Phoenix is the perfect amount of, like, adolescent in this movie. Like, it really, really feels, like, stunted.
Yes. He's only grown physically.
Yeah.
Not otherwise.
Emotionally in any way.
She was decapitated in an accident. In a state of shock, he tries to take a bath, only to discover an intruder hiding in the ceiling.
Is this his maintenance?
Yeah, very funny, again.
Also, something else that happens, like, just at the very beginning of a movie, it's a little thing that they didn't mention here, but is important, is that the apartment complex, there's a brown recluse spider on the loose.
Yeah.
And when he comes back, we see one guy that's dead from it.
Yeah, one guy, because they have a picture of, like, the bite of the brown recluse spider on the wall. And then the guy obviously has a brown recluse spider bite.
And so the guy that tried to attack him is dead with a brown recluse spider bite. Because, of course, the brown recluse is in Beau's apartment. Of all the apartments that could be in, it's in his. And then the intruder who's hiding above the bathtub... Mm-hmm. Gets bit by the brown spider too.
The intruder falls and Beau runs naked out of his apartment and onto the streets. We get a lot of Joaquin Phoenix butt.
Yeah, and dick and balls.
Oh, definitely balls. For sure balls. More so balls than dick, I'd say.
Yeah, just a little bit of dick.
After a brief confrontation with a police officer, Beau is hit by a truck.
Yeah, he goes to a cop for help, but of course the cop is like,
but also, there has been a serial killer on the loose, and it is this man who was naked walking around stabbing people. And so people think that it's Beau is this guy.
But that guy's out there at the exact same time. And, like,
it's so silly.
It's so funny. The cop's, like, holding the gun. He's like, don't make me do this.
Don't make me do this.
Do not make me do this. Do not make me do this. And I was like, please. And Beau's literally doing nothing. And the cop's like, please do not make me do this. And Beau's like, I'm not doing anything. So he starts to run away.
And he gets hit by a car. But wait.
Of course he does.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, at this point in the movie, you're starting to be like, ah, but then you're like, can this guy catch a fucking break?
He cannot.
Then he wakes up.
Wakes up 2 days later in the house of a married couple.
Of course, it's a misery situation.
It is.
Yeah, a misery situation.
Grace and Roger. That's Nathan Lane.
And Amy
Ryan. They care for an unstable veteran named Jeeves, who was their son's army comrade before he was killed in action.
Their son was killed in action.
Yeah, okay, so their son Nathan was killed in action, and he had a friend named Jeeves who he served with, and Jeeves is not well, and they let him sleep in, like, a RV in their yard.
Yeah. And they medicate him.
Yes, because the father is a doctor. He's a surgeon. The couple have an angsty teenage daughter named Tony who instantly despises Beau. Beau calls Mona's attorney, Dr. Cohen, who chastises him and informs Beau that her last wish was to not be buried until he is present.
This is Richard Kind.
Yeah.
And also, this is something I didn't really catch until I started thinking about it later, but it's that Mona is Jewish.
Yeah, and so they have to bury immediately.
Yeah, you have to bury immediately, or it's, like, a great sign of, like, disrespect.
Right.
So, the fact that Beau now has not been at his mom's house for, at this point, like, three days, that's really bad.
That's really bad, and he's like, you are embarrassing everyone. So, that's a big deal. Roger promises to take Beau to his mother's estate as soon as possible, but insists he needs rest until he's healed. On the day of Beau's release, Tony takes him to her brother's old room and attempts to force him to paint the walls in different colors. Well, first, she says that she's going to take him and then makes him smoke something. Weed.
She says it's three things, but no further elaboration.
Yeah. Yeah. So, something in a joint form.
Yeah.
And makes him smoke that so he gets, like, super high on whatever it is and then comes back in and then... this starts to happen. So she tries to get him to...
Well, also, before this
So
Beau is, like, sitting on the couch.
Yes.
And Grace comes up to him and basically is, like, she's, like, giving him, like, secret messages, like, stop incriminating yourself.
Yeah.
Then she tells him, she starts to say something to him, but Nathan Lane's character walks in and she realizes she can't. So she gives him a kiss on the forehead and then tells him, turn on channel 78. And when he does, it's a surveillance feed of him.
Of the living room.
And it goes back a lot. But then there's a scene where he starts to fast forward it.
Mm-hmm.
And you start seeing stuff that has not yet happened.
Yeah.
But does happen in the movie later.
Yes.
But it's so fast that you can't really, like, catch any of it. And mm-hmm. then he's, like, interrupted by... basically what this, Tony. Yeah.
When he refuses, she ruthlessly berates Bo and drinks one of her paint buckets, killing herself.
Yeah, she, like, gulps down that.
Yeah.
Also, anytime someone dies in this movie...
their eyes.
They have the most horrifying looks on their face ever. Like, yeah. So scary.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. Grace walks in on Bo standing over Tony's body and violently blames him for her death.
Yeah.
As Bo flees into the woods, Grace sends Jeeves after him. So, yeah, this army guy is after Bo.
Yes. But Bo, of course, running through the woods, bonks his head. Of course.
This man definitely has a concussion.
He bonks his head so hard.
There's so much, like, does he have a traumatic brain injury? Because he hits his head so many times in this movie.
He gets hit by a car.
Yeah.
He gets, like, smashed by a fat man coming down on him from the ceiling.
Yeah.
You know, like a porcelain bathtub.
Yeah.
He bonks his head real hard on a branch in the woods while he's full out sprinting. And he's got all these other injuries, too.
Yeah. Lost in the wilderness, Bo comes upon a group of traveling theater actors named the Orphans of the Forest. Did you love this, Allison? Zip, zap, zop.
When they were playing Zip, Zap, Zop, I was giggling.
He is invited to their rehearsal and becomes entranced by the play, imagining himself as the protagonist in a lengthy animated sequence that illustrates an alternate life path that parallels his own. A man approaches Bo and informs him that he knew his father and that he's alive. Oh, I guess I should say, like, this whole animated type thing that's going on, he's like picturing that he has three sons.
It lasts for a very long time. Basically, we watch him live out this like whole life.
Yeah.
Where he goes on this like hero's journey mm-hmm. to find his family. He ends up back there. He meets his sons. They reconnect. And then he tells us this story.
Mm-hmm.
Does it talk about the story? I don't want to like...
No.
Okay. He tells us this story about the thing that we heard earlier about how his dad died,
mm-hmm.
giving, you know, bringing him life, shall
right.
we say.
Coming.
And his mom basically telling him that if he ever has sex with anyone, the same thing will happen to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, that's why I've never had sex.
Right.
And then his sons go right. like,
how did we?
How do we exist
right.
if you've never had sex? And that's what brings him out of it.
Yeah.
He's back.
Hmm. So interesting. The troop is ambushed by Jeeves, slaughtering several actors in the process. Bo evades Jeeves and flees deeper into the forest.
Yes.
Bo hitchhikes the rest of the way to the estate, only to find that he had just missed his mother's funeral. Shiva Stevens.
Grub for the grieve. There's so much stuff in this movie that, and honestly, I don't even think I've seen it all. Just the background of these films are a trove of jokes,
yes.
Easter eggs, information. It's like there's so much stuff in the background of mm-hmm. this movie that I think this movie has such insanely high rewatch value.
Yeah.
Because there's so many little things in it.
Right.
There's no way you can catch it all.
Absolutely.
That is my cat.
He's
breathing.
Just like breathing so hard.
He snores when he sleeps. Like he has a little snore.
Aww.
Yeah, probably bad though.
Aww. He naps on the couch and wakes up to the sound of a woman entering the house late for the service. He realizes it's Elaine and they reconnect. So this is the girl from the boat that they met initially and is now played by Parker Posey.
Yep.
They make their way to Mona's bedroom and passionately make love. Bo is terrified that he's going to die the second he ejaculates, but is relieved when he survives. However, Elaine has died mid-climax, her body frozen stiff. So scary.
It's so scary, but so...
so funny!
Also, something else is, like, before this, there's a lot of scene, like, there's a lot of time where Bo's just walking around the house of his mom,
mm-hmm.
kind of just looking at all those pictures
yeah.
and stuff like that. And we come across this one photo of... and it seems that, like, Mona, his mom, she runs a company called, like, MW.
Yeah.
And MW is kind of like an everything company.
Kind of like an Amazon.
Kind of like an Amazon, Google.
Right.
But they're in pharmaceuticals. Yeah. They're in security. They're in phones. They make frozen meals.
Yeah, they make everything.
Literally anything and everything you could want. Mona's incredibly, incredibly wealthy.
Yes.
And he comes to this picture, and it's a portrait of Mona made up of photos of her employees. And when he's looking at it, the picture focuses on Elaine.
Yeah.
Elaine is in that that grid, okay? But also, if you don't look at her, like if you avert your eyes as the audience and look somewhere else, you'll start noticing some familiar faces. The one that caught my eye, it's not the longest look. So again, this is one of those things I love to like pause it once the DVD comes out and look, or when it streams. The guy who attacked him at his door, who had all the tattoos.
The tattoo guy.
He is on that poster right next to Elaine. He worked for Mona.
Okay. So that.
So either we are kind of to believe that he. So if Fishy, so he is in on it somehow. Or he was like working for this company and then they left him like destitute.
Right.
And he's like crazy now.
Right. Yeah. Mona then appears from the shadows and reveals that she was not only still alive, but watching the whole time.
Yeah, at first I was like, is this a ghost?
I thought so, but no, it's not.
She's alive. She faked her own death.
To fuck with her son.
To, like, just get at him. And then he fucked in her bed.
So funny.
Why, Bo? But it's so interesting because he doesn't even, like, really initiate it.
Yeah. She shames Bo and reveals that his therapist works for her, sharing their sessions with her for years. He demands to know the truth about his father, and she takes him to the attic, where Bo learns that he not only has a secret twin brother, but his father is actually a giant penis-shaped monster.
I don't know that the twin brother thing is all that spelled out.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure that I'd say that that is his twin brother. Because there's some heavy conflicting information. There is a scene, there's this like dream sequence scene thing that we see a lot.
Yeah.
In bits and pieces. Where Bo basically is in the bathtub and then this other kid tries to come in and tries to get in the bathtub, but it also kind of looks like Bo.
Right.
And then they try to, like, get him undressed. He doesn't want to get in the bathtub. He asks to know where his dad is. Then she takes him up to the attic and she locks him up there. Bo always thought that this was a dream and that the other kid represented the side of him that was defiant towards his mom. And was angry to his mom, and that she locked that side away and never let it out. But when he goes up to the attic, he keeps saying stuff like, this is just like my dream, this is just like my dream.
And she's like, it's a memory.
Yeah, she says, it's not a dream, it's a memory. So I don't know if that means he's been up to the attic before, or if it insinuates that he has a brother who was sent up there. And if it was him, who's that man? Is it his father? Is the penis monster his father?
I think the penis monster is his father.
Yeah.
The only thing that makes me think it's his brother is because during the eulogy, Richard Kine says, Bo, her only surviving son. Which makes me think that there was another son at one point.
Just weird. I mean, he's just been completely erased, though.
Yeah.
It's never, is there another time where it's mentioned? And even in the bathtub scene, we don't see other Bo.
Right.
So you can't tell if they look different or the same. And we do get some flashbacks of him as a little kid.
Right.
And there's no other bed or boy. But then the bathroom scene happens when he's like 9.
Right. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't either. I'm not really sure you're meant to know.
I don't think you are. I think you probably...
I think you're meant to think at first that that man is his father.
Right.
And then Pan.
And that's his father.
And that's his father. And it's a ginormous penis monster.
This movie was conceived on acid.
Oh, yeah. this is really one of the scenes where I was like, Okay. So things gotta be a certain way. This is definitely, like, I would say that this scene is probably more than any of the scenes, a scene that took me out a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I was like, whoa, what? Okay, mom faking her death, that I can buy.
Well, there's a huge chode with giant balls.
Yeah,
so.
It says before it all could have happened in the real world.
Right.
Now we're completely outside the
realm. Now there's a penis monster.
Now there's a penis monster and things are different.
Yes, things are different now. we're different now. At that moment, Jeeves breaks into the house and is killed by the monster. After further humiliation from his mother, an enraged Beau strangles her, seemingly killing her for real.
Except, again, this makes no sense because he strangles her for a little bit.
And then stops.
And then stops. She stands for like 30 seconds and then just collapses into a glass table.
Again, funny.
Again, you're kind of like, at this point, you like don't really trust her.
Right.
So you're like, is she fucking faking it?
Right, exactly.
But then you don't know.
In shock, Beau leaves the estate and finds a motorboat on a beach.
His in shock face, hilarious.
So funny.
The whole theater laughed.
Oh my god. It stayed on it for like a good minute. It's so funny. Yeah, it's like the end of The Shining, that frozen face.
It's like a parody of that face.
Yes, it's hilarious. After entering a cave, he commandeers the boat. After entering a cave, the boat's motor begins to stall, and he suddenly finds himself in a crowded arena where he's put on trial. With Mona and Dr. Cohen on a podium acting as prosecutors, they reveal footage of Beau sliding his mother on a jumbotron. When Beau's defense attorney is murdered by one of Mona's henchmen, Beau tries to fend for himself while also noticing that his feet are glued to the boat. But when his attempts to appeal to his mother fail due to her not responding, he decides to accept his fate and the motor finally explodes, causing the boat to capsize and result in his death by drowning. When it becomes apparent that Beau is dead, Mona, Dr. Cohen, and the crowd leaves while the overturned boat remains stationary in the water. We stayed for like a good few minutes after the scene.
We were like, there's gotta be more. And in the end, we Googled after credits scene and it wasn't there.
So yeah.
We were like, all right, let's go. But yeah, I mean, this is... that's probably the second thing that took me out the most is the arena.
Right.
And they're pretty much, we kind of talked about this last night and after doing some research this morning, mm-hmm. pretty much two working theories as to what's going on
yes,
in this movie.
Yes, there's two ideas.
I think everyone would agree that
right.
there's essentially two ways this could go. Number one way, I'm going to go with the like more fun way first.
Yeah.
Which is that this is like the Truman Show for Beau, designed by Mona.
Right. Like, this is all her trying to get at him.
Everything is just meant to fuck with him. Every interaction he has, from the pills mm-hmm. all the way to the arena, are all completely set up by her.
Yeah.
Everyone's in on it. Everybody works for her. There's a lot of evidence that supports that Mona is basically behind all of this.
Right. There's a photo in her house at one point where, like, it's a photo of him from the security camera footage.
Yeah. From house.
Roger's home, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, like, clearly she's been watching
him. She's involved.
And then there's also the idea that at one point he says that he knows his mom wasn't dead and that he could tell it was Marta's hands, mm-hmm. who's, like, one of their servants.
Because she has, like, a birthmark.
And he asks her how much she had to pay her to do it. And she basically says enough that her entire extended family quit their job the same day and will never need to work again.
Oof.
And so clearly she has the kind of money to, like, make this sort of stuff
right. this,
happen.
This is possible for her.
Yeah. And it seems to me like, yeah, I mean, but the only thing that kind of doesn't support this theory, I mean, everything is supported. There's so many, I truly believe that if you looked for an Easter egg in nearly every single scene, you would find some evidence of
MW being involved
somewhere.
Right.
In some way. The only place I don't know that I for sure see it is in the acting troupe in the woods.
Which I think you could probably say that says something about society.
Yeah, it's like these people that have chosen to remove themselves. But of course, the tracking device that is of MW
right.
Is found by Jeeves.
Yeah, well, I don't think we mentioned that, but Beau has a tracking device.
The whole movie
once he gets with Nathan Lane's characters, because he puts one on them.
And so, all right. That's a possibility. The only thing I think that really doesn't support that is, like, how could she possibly have planned these events
right.
so seamlessly? But then it also could just be said that, like, her son is so predictable.
Yeah.
That she knows every single thing that could happen. She knows how to prey upon his, like, absolute worst fears.
Yeah.
And then the second theory, which I think is probably a little bit more realistic,
mm-hmm.
is that all of this is in Beau's head.
Yeah, and I think we talked about when we think those would begin, and we were talking about how when he initially takes the medicine,
yeah.
that would probably be where all of this thinking begins and kind of all of this begins in his head.
Yeah, it's almost like the minute he thinks about taking new medicine, he starts to go like,
what could happen?
What could happen? Like, oh, maybe my water will be turned off and then I can't get the water. Then I'll have to go down the street. Then this will happen.
Right.
Because of these things. And then
that'll happen.
And then this will happen. And because all, like, I think it happens after he calls his mom about mm-hmm. his keys getting stolen. I think yes. that probably really does happen.
Right.
And then after that, he has a fear recognized,
mm-hmm.
which is he calls his mom hoping that she'll be understanding or tell him what to do. But of course, she doesn't tell him
what
to
do. She guilt trips him
and she's disappointed and
yeah.
she's upset with him. That was his biggest fear in that moment. Then I think he starts spiraling and I think he probably does not take his anxiety medication.
Right, but thinks about what would happen if he did.
Yeah, and then the rest of this is all the way up. Like, because this movie is just one of those things where it's like, okay, every single scenario this guy enters, it could go so many ways, but whatever way it goes, it's the worst way you could possibly.
Yeah.
There is no, it's like, this is, I think this story is clearly like supposed to be like a classic hero's tale.
Right. Absolutely. Hero's journey for sure.
And you even see that on the, I think like the marketing
mm-hmm.
where you've got the four pictures
absolutely.
Of Beau and you have the like. Even the tagline, I gotta look at what the tagline is.
Oh, his greatest fear becomes his greatest adventure or something like
yeah.
that.
From his darkest fears comes the greatest adventure. So, I mean, clearly that's like kind of a hero's journey type thing, but it's like, of course our hero is like a whiny little baby.
He's just a little baby boy and he's annoying and the worst.
And it's really interesting because you do kind of feel bad for him until you remember that he's like 45.
Right, exactly, because he's acting like a freaking kid.
And he looks incredibly old. Like, I don't think that is by any means an accident.
Well, he looks so much older than the other people who are supposed to be his age.
Yeah.
Like Parker Posey's character, are they supposed to be the same age? And she looks awesome. Like, she looks like Parker Posey.
Right.
But he's obviously just been so aged up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he looks, like, horrible for
yeah.
his age. And, which is interesting because his mom looks, of course, great for her.
I mean, Patti LuPone looks amazing.
Yeah. And so he looks horrible for his age, which only contrasts with then the hyper-adolescent attitude that he has.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, like, there is just a certain level of, like, some of this stuff is so ridiculous that
yeah, it could never happen.
It doesn't matter if Jeff Bezos comes in and tries to make it happen. Penis monsters don't exist.
Right.
And of course, to Beau, a guy who's never seen his father before.
And that would be his understanding of his, in his like teen brain, that
yeah.
would kind of be his understanding of his
it's
father.
It's like, oh, he's never seen his father before. So when he imagines whatever the worst possible version of his father is, of course, it's not just a man.
It's a penis
monster. It's a penis monster. It's a literal penis monster.
Right.
It's like, how much more, you know, like heavy handed
right on the nose.
On the nose you get. And then, you know, if that is his twin brother up there, it's like, it's not his twin brother, it's him.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's the part of him that
was defiant
yeah.
and his mom's keeping him up there and walked
yeah.
away. And
which I think makes more sense thematically.
Yeah.
Than having a twin brother.
Yeah. And in addition, I think another thing is you often, in basically every scenario he goes through, you see some level of a family dynamic
mm-hmm.
that is different from Beau's, but that Beau somehow always is always being taken care of by, like, mom figures.
Right.
In every single dynamic you see, he's being taken care of by, like, a mom figure.
Mm-hmm.
And
the pregnant lady at the
pregnant lady,
the,
of course, Grace.
Yeah.
Those are really the only two.
Yeah.
But he has this, like, consistent mom thing going on. And you could argue that that's Patti LuPone's mom trying to, like, test him.
Mm-hmm.
But you also could just say that if it's in Beau's own mind, he's making up these, like, these gentle mom figures to, like, guide him through. But then, of course, in every scenario, they abandon him
right.
or turn on him. Grace obviously doesn't believe him about the daughter, mm-hmm. and then the pregnant woman runs away the minute there's trouble.
Yep. Hmm. Just more moms he can't depend on.
Just more moms he can't depend on. And so I think that, yeah, me, more than likely, I fall into the, it's in his head.
I would say so. I do think that if I were to rewatch it, I would love to rewatch it from a point of view, like, what if this is Mona's, and yeah. try to look for that evidence, because I wouldn't be surprised if there's some there.
Oh, I think there's a lot there. But yeah. I also think that if you're of the, it's in his head camp, then of course there could be as much evidence that his mom's pulling the right. strings the whole time.
Because that in that his head.
Would be his worst fear. His yeah. worst fear would be
his mom doing all this to fuck him over.
Doing it just because of how mad at him. Yeah. She is. That she's doing all this to punish him, up to killing him.
Yeah.
Just because he disappointed her and mm-hmm. continues to disappoint her.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that obviously the bathtub scene
right.
is real in some sort. I think that the boat scene's very real. I think that definitely did mm-hmm. actually happen. And I think Bo is exactly like what we see in the movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think the in-his-head camp kind of helps. I've heard a lot of people criticizing, like, some logical inconsistencies with the film or some, like, awkward things don't really make sense if you look at the plot too hard.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of that can be solved by the idea that it's, like,
in his head.
Yeah. Because it's, like, yeah, you're meant to, if it was a perfectly reality, you wouldn't really believe it. It's not meant to be, like, reality. It's meant to be Bo's anxiety dream.
Right, his paranoid reality.
I mean, again, the movie is called
Bo is Afraid.
This is a real glass onion situation. Like, yeah, the movie told you what it was. You were looking for something else.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it, though. It was hilarious.
Yes. Oh, yes. This was a great movie. I'm glad people in our... It seems like our theater really enjoyed it.
Yeah, everyone in our theater seemed to really like it, and everyone thought it was really funny.
I really do think this movie is going to be fine.
Yeah.
I think critical reviews have been pretty mixed, but I think that those people are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have been criticizing this as like, it's pretentious and it's
Is it any more pretentious than his other movies? I don't think so.
It's over the top and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's silly. It's like the absurdity of the kind of shit that people who are anxious can make up in their own mind.
Exactly.
And then something else Jane and I talked about last night was we talked about how there's this one scene, which they don't mention in the Wikipedia article, but happens early in the film,
mm-hmm.
very early, before Bo goes home, after his therapist appointment, where he comes out and he sees a man about to jump from a building.
Yeah.
And there's a crowd of people who are filming it, mm-hmm. and he asks one of the guys, like, what's going on? And he says, we're trying to get him to jump.
Yeah.
And then Bo just, like, walks away
right.
and goes home. And then right after that, we immediately watch Bo almost just get fucking killed
right.
by a random guy while he tries to get into his apartment.
Yeah.
And then he sees the brown recluse thing and the water's off mm-hmm. and we're laughing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, okay, these are the worst possible things we could do to this dude.
Right. And we're laughing at it.
And we're laughing at it because there is just a certain level of absurdity with that level of bad fortune.
Mm.
So a lot of Schadenfreude, if you will, in this movie. Which is like, yeah, we kind of like to watch people suffer.
Yeah.
Especially when they suffer to this absurd of a level. It's comedic to
right.
us. Only because we are not living it.
Yeah.
Of course, like, if this was reality, you'd be like, this poor fucking guy mm-hmm. cannot get a break. He never does anything wrong.
Aw, Bo.
But well, of course, like, his lack of ability to stand up for himself, to explain...
To be, like, autonomous.
Have any level of a commanding presence is, of course, what always gets him
mm-hmm.
in trouble.
Yeah. Why his mom is so disappointed in him.
Yeah, because he can't grow up. Although, there's also some really weird sex stuff between the mom and the son.
I mean, I think that that's just given in Ari Aster movies now.
You know, Hereditary didn't have nearly as much weird sex stuff.
Maybe that's just because I watched The Strange Thing About the Johnsons, and now, like, all of everything is just, like...
Okay, I think this is really the only one, other than the Johnsons movie. Because Hereditary, pretty normal mom-son relationship mm-hmm. up until she hates him.
Yeah.
Midsommar, she doesn't really even have a relationship with her parents. We don't ever even see that.
They die.
And that's not even their choice.
Right.
So, bad family dynamics in both, but not sexy family dynamics.
Okay, okay. I won't look that up on your browser history.
Nothing like, nothing implying.
Yeah, there are a lot of scenes where Bo and his mom are, like, in bed together, and, like, yeah, it's weird.
The mom, like, clearly has a weird thing for
Well, him. She also is like, don't have sex with anyone.
Yeah.
And that's weird.
And there's, like, the part on the boat in particular, again, like, this is one of the parts I think is very real. We have Bo, like, teenaged Bo, looking the best he ever looks in this movie, by the way. Mm-hmm. Because he just looks fucking rough and everything. He's laying in the bed, and his mom's, like, on her... He's, like, facing the ceiling, and his mom's, like, on her side, like, facing towards him. Mm-hmm. And she's like, so do you like that girl?
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't know. Like, I know. And then she's like, it's okay if you do. Like, you can tell me. And... There's just all this kind of, like, weird sexual tension that's completely one-sided. Like, I don't think Bo has a thing for his mom.
Right. I think his mom has a thing for him.
Yeah. And I think that it's just kind of, like, making fun of, like, weird mother-son relationships.
Right, right.
Where it's, like, the mom's obsessed with the son. Yeah. And the son is completely dependent upon mm-hmm. the mother. It's, like, a classic, like, mommy boy.
Right. Mother boy.
A mother boy.
Buster Bluth.
Yeah, it's a Buster Bluth. It's literally Buster Bluth. That's exactly it. Earlier, I felt like this was reminding me of Arrested Development.
But Buster Bluth and Lucille. Why.
This is Lucille and Buster Bluth. Oh, my God. This is a movie. Like, if they had a horror movie. This would literally. Yeah, okay. That's it. That's exactly how I will describe this film to people from now on. I'll be like, you know Arrested Development? And like, yeah, you know Lucille and Buster? Okay, so imagine they have their own standalone movie where Buster gets an apartment. And then he has to go visit Lucille.
That's exactly what would happen.
This and now, if we just added the Arrested Development narrator to this and took out the scary parts, it would be a long episode of Arrested Development.
Ron Howard, get on, get in here.
Hey, Ron Howard, where are you at? I gotta believe he knows about that. It's exactly the same.
It is.
Bo, yes, that's exactly how Bo acts, like Buster.
Mother.
Oh my good God.
Whenever Lucille 2's like, you can call me Lucille. He's like, well, that would be weird if I called you Lucille.
That's a mother's name.
Yeah. I really enjoyed going to see this movie.
Me too. I honestly think this is a movie I will watch many times over.
Yeah.
I feel like this movie has a ton of rewatch value. This is a fun movie. It's good, too, if you like horror, but maybe you're not so into, I don't know, something that's too intense.
Right.
This is, did not feel too intense. It is really long. It is a lot of a time commitment. But
did not feel as long as
feel
it is.
It that long.
Yeah, it does not feel as long as it is, in my opinion.
No, I felt like...
It felt 2 hours.
That's what it felt like to me, yeah.
So I think that's good. I rarely see a 3-hour movie where I'm like, oh, that didn't feel that long.
Yeah, that never happens. Most of the time, I'm like, geez. And a lot of times when I watch movies, I really feel like there's a lot they could have cut.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel this way about this film.
Mm-mm.
And I was looking up some stuff too. I do believe there are some, like, there were some alternate versions of this film because this was actually the first film he ever wrote after his short film.
Oh.
So if you feel like this is way more tied to his short film, that's because it is.
Oh.
He wrote this before he even wrote Hereditary.
Really? Okay.
The first draft of this script was written pre-Hereditary.
That makes a lot of sense.
And a lot of people say, okay, I gotta remember, like, what the alternate versions here were. I'm trying to remember, but essentially from what I remember, at the very first ending is he goes away on the boat and, mm-hmm. like, that is it.
Oh, okay. Like, he leaves on the boat.
Like, he leaves on the boat and he has that, like, freedom from his mom. And he kills his mom, leaves on the boat, and that's, like, it.
Mm-hmm.
But then... I do believe that then there's, like, another ending where they, like, come back in and it's like he goes again, but the stadium thing doesn't happen.
Oh.
I don't know. There's a lot. Okay, then there's another. Yeah, there's another one where he sails into the sea, finds himself, but then he notices a cruise ship that's heading his way that has a fictionalized version of Michelle Obama.
Whoa.
Leading an exercise on board, and it's heading his direction.
Yeah. What?
That's the original, like, ending.
And, Ari's so fucking weird.
And also, the original ending for this movie was that his mom at the end had to be, like, dragged out of the room kicking and screaming while he was being, like, put on trial or whatever. Like, she ended up, like, coming back to him.
Oh,
really? She didn't want him to die. But then they changed it. Because, probably because Astro wanted to, like, twist the knife a little bit.
It's fair. I liked the ending.
Me too. I think it fits.
And it was not, it was cool, though, like, getting to walk out, getting to, like, sit in the theater as all those people in the movie are walking out of the stadium.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty cool.
And you're walking out.
Right.
It was interesting. Like, at one point I said, like, oh, look, the stadium's empty now. And Jane, like, turned around to look at the theater, and I was like, oh, no, no, not the theater. The stadium. Yeah. This movie is really interesting. Has some really interesting themes on anxiety, really interesting mommy
son themes.
really interesting themes about just like our pleasure at watching pain.
Yeah.
Shot in front of, that's the only way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's just, I really liked it.
I did too.
I think all the critics that don't like this movie are dead wrong.
I think so too. I would agree. What would you give it?
I was worried.
Yeah, me too.
I was worried going in that it was going to flop.
Yeah.
Not a flop.
No, I liked it a lot. I definitely will rewatch this.
Oh, yeah. I think I'd give this movie a 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
A couple times kind of took me out. Like, I wasn't a huge ginormous fan of the penis monster
reveal. I get it, but...
I do think it kind of, like, shifts the tone of the movie really dramatically towards really close to the end.
Mm-hmm.
I feel the same way about the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
It really shifts the tone of the movie. I think it works, but I do think it is very hard tone shift.
Right.
I loved the acting.
Oh, so good.
It's really pretty.
Joaquin's amazing. He just plays a little bumblebutt boy, man boy, like, so well.
Yeah, a lot of nakedness in this movie.
Oh my god, you see his balls so much. Like, there's this wild scene where him and Parker Posey are fucking, and they, like, show it, and, like, they just show his, like, balls underneath her butt, and it's so upsetting.
Yeah, it's gross. but there's also, you know, it's funny. Like, it's a funny movie. I love the little animation sequence.
Yeah, that was great.
This is a good movie.
I agree.
What about you? What'd you give it?
I'd probably give it a 9. Yeah. I really liked it a lot. I don't think I liked it as much as Midsommar or Hereditary.
Me neither.
I liked it a lot, though.
Yeah, me too. I still really, really liked it. It's almost hard to even compare it to...
Because they're not comedies.
Exactly. And I felt it was hard to compare Midsommar to Hereditary because there's such different types of horror. Like, just the things that they... So far, every single movie of Ari Aster's feels like it almost, like, stands alone.
Right.
This still probably ranks lower for me than Hereditary or Midsommar.
Mm-hmm.
But...
This ranks higher for me than The Strange Thing About the Johnsons, so there's that.
Jane was upset.
It's upsetting, guys. I don't know. Maybe don't watch it. If you want to watch some weird-ass incest movie, then watch it, because, wow.
He was trying to make it upsetting.
Well, he freaking mission accomplished. He was talking about it. The reason I came across it was because I was watching him and Nathan Fielder do their, like, talk at the Beau's Afraid director's commentary, and they were both tripping on acid, and, like, so they were trying to get him to talk about it, and I was like, what is that movie? And guys, if you want to be upset for days afterward by only watching a 30-minute film, then go watch it.
You know, it was a student film for a reason. It's the only way you can make a film like that.
Absolutely. What do you say? Other movies, milquetoast, is what he called them.
He said that the other ones were milquetoast because they were just, like, Oscar bait movies.
and I'm like, and you're like, right, this is not an Oscar bait movie.
Like, I'm going to make something that, like, everyone's going to remember forever. And he did it. He
was like, so upsetting.
I will make something that will fuck up your life horrifically.
It's so gross. Anyway.
Imagine being the actor in that movie.
Jesus, guys, it's so weird. It's so weird. Do you have a review for me?
I do. Now, I will say, while the critics have had mixed reviews, the audience does have a 7.4 on IMDb.
Oh, okay. Not bad.
But the lowest, like, I was only able to find one one-star review.
Mm.
And so that's good. Most people are giving it a rank, I would say, of, like, either it's, like, 9s and 10s, or it's, like, 4s and 5s.
Mm, mm-hmm.
So everyone pretty much agrees that this movie has great acting. It's a well-made
right.
movie.
Right. It's beautiful. It's very,
like,
pretty.
It's just well-made. A lot of what people disagree with are the things that we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to read a review called, it's 4 out of 10.
Okay.
Mommy Issues the Movie. Bo is Afraid is not a film. It is 3 hours worth of well-acted, stunningly presented, garbled ramblings of a very unwell man, masquerading as a feature film. Somebody go check on Ari Aster. He needs therapy and a hug.
Not wrong.
The plot, if one can call it that, starts out coherent and promising and quickly abandons any attempt at consistent logic, tone, pacing, or focus. Instead, we get dozens of plot and character threads that are introduced and either abandoned or sloppily concluded for shock value, with little to no impact on character, themes, or events. I do want to say that in, like, hero's journeys, that's pretty common.
Yeah.
In hero journey films, you meet people, you leave them. Mm-hmm. You meet people, they die. You meet people, like, and they don't come back.
Right.
So this kind of does have that, but it's just, like, the reason he always leaves them is because of some, like, horrific thing.
Mm-hmm.
Only one consistent theme remains present through the entire runtime: mommy issues. And it's clear that this project was Ari Aster vomiting his psychological maladies all over the page and slapping it on the screen as a catharsis exercise. I give Aster credit for making something that's truly unlike anything else that exists in film. But there is a line where the filmmaker gets so stuck up his own anus that the finished product is inaccessible, irrelevant, meandering, and non-relatable to everyone else. And Aster crossed that line by several miles with this one. Hereditary was a fluke. I don't know that I'd say that not everyone can relate to this. I've met a lot of men who could take some lessons from Bo.
Yeah, you could say that.
Maybe see themselves a little too much inside this movie. And I think, like, again, obviously, Ari Aster seems to love the family drama.
Yeah, I mean, that's, like, what all of his movies have been about.
And it's, like, interesting that they'd be like, Hereditary is not about mommy issues, but this is about
right.
mommy issues. And you're like, this is about a different
kind of mommy issue.
The first one's more like your mother despises you, secretly resents you.
Mm-hmm.
This movie's more like, and also about, you know, grief when they right. blame you. This movie's more like
your mom being obsessed with you,
wants to fuck you.
Yeah.
And when you don't, her feelings get hurt.
Right. When you don't return her emotions in the exact same way, which is what he said. Yeah, he said, if I don't return her emotions in the exact same way, it's like I've slighted her, mm-hmm. which I have met moms like that.
Yes. too many. I mean, the boy mom trope is a meme for
exactly,
like,
exactly.
Boy mom,
this,
like,
is literally hashtag boy mom in a movie.
I was like, literally, you go to TikTok, search a boy mom, you're gonna find a billion sketches of moms basically doing this, like, of being like, I love my daughter, but my son?
It's like the SNL sketch.
Yes.
It's like, oh, my daughter's, but my son? Oh my god, I love my son.
I would die for my son.
I would die for my son.
And he's always coming over. It takes $10,000. They say, you can't take $10,000.
He's always
mom's.
Taking food out of the fridge. They're like, that's mom's food. I'm like, no, honey, that's his food.
And you're like, shut up. Like, how can you still be talking? But my son. Yeah, exactly. It's like, that was on SNL. If it's reached SNL, it's like late stage comedy. You know,
absolutely,
it's comedy that we've
that's
already
reached
known
the
about.
Surface level.
Yeah, we've known about that comedy for a year by the time it's reached SNL.
Yes.
So, yeah, like,
it's a thing.
It's a thing. The idea that this movie is, like, non-relatable. Maybe you don't want to relate to it.
Maybe you don't want to relate.
No
to
doubt,
it.
Nobody wants to relate to this movie. But I have a feeling that some of you do. There's certain, like, the ability to... I think a lot of people could relate to Bo in the certain, like, imaginings of the worst possible things
right.
that happen.
Thinking about the worst things that can happen and that paranoia that comes about, like, just the world in general.
Right. But it is, like, pathetic because he is, like...
He's like a 40-year-old man.
A 40-year-old man, and he looks like he's 60. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a certain level of, like, the way he talks is, like a 12-year-old child.
What? What? What?
But I didn't. But I didn't.
But I didn't. I didn't. Help me. Help me. That's how he talks.
Bobby. Yeah.
Mommy, mommy.
Mother. Honestly, Buster has more of a spine.
It's so true.
Than Bo. Like, I would say that overall, Buster actually has a better relationship with his mom
yeah.
than Bo does.
I would agree. At least they do pageants.
Yeah, at least they have, you know, a bond.
They have hobbies they do together.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Rich mom supporting her son. It's so true. All right.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Yeah, guys.
I told someone, a fan messaged us and said that we should cover A Good Person, the new Flo Pugh movie.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll do that once it streams. So be on the lookout for that. But thank you guys so much for listening. We appreciate it.
Yes.
Bye.